Welcome, welcome, welcome to a special bonus edition of the That's So Cincinnati podcast. I'm doing the intro today because Sherry is still trying to calm down after talking to our bonus special guest, Emilio Estevez. Sherry, I'm proud of you. You were afraid of fangirling too much, but you held it together.
I did. We didn't even talk about my, you know, formative growing up years where there's no doubt in my mind that I had a photo of him on my wall. There's no doubt.
Oh, I mean, who didn't during that era? So let's just jump right in. We are going to talk to Emilio Estevez. He is in Cincinnati. A lot of people don't realize that he has special connections here. He's a property owner here. But he is re-releasing a movie that came out back in 2011 called The Way. So we're going to talk about why is he re-releasing it. We're going to talk about the special one-day cinematic re-release and special bonus content tied to that. We couldn't wait till next week, so we're just going to drop this episode as a bonus That's So Cincinnati podcast for you. It's going to be all Emilio all day, and should we jump right in?
Absolutely.
Let's do it.
Straight from Hollywood. Oh, wait a second. Not Hollywood. We're here in Cincinnati with Emilio Estevez. Welcome.
Hey, good morning. How's it going?
We are very good today. Where are you actually today?
I am in the Lightbourne Studios over here in OTR. So we're, you know, as the crow flies, we're pretty close.
We are. I wish we were in person today, but you have a very busy day of promoting not a new movie, but kind of a new movie. It's called The Way, and we wanted to talk to you about that and the experience you had directing your father in this movie that came out a decade ago, but is being re-released. And I love this strategy, and so we're going to talk about that. But let's kind of, we like to talk about our guests first.
So obviously, people know who Emilio Estevez is. Can we call you the founding presiding member of the Brat Pack? Is that accurate?
No.
And it's hard to believe the Brat Pack, you know, which I kind of identify with generationally speaking, kind of that older Gen X group, is in their deep into their 50s, if not into their 60s already. So.
Don't age us.
Oh, we're not going to do that. But can you, people might be wondering, you know, like, why is Emilio Estevez on the That's So Cincinnati podcast? Can we start with kind of like why you're here and your ties to the area for those that might not know?
Well, sure. I mean, in fact, my mother was born here in Cincinnati in 1939. She was then taken to her grandparents' house over in Salyersville, Kentucky. And she was, for 6 years of her life, she was raised there. And then I think most people know that my dad is born, raised in Dayton. And my parents actually didn't meet here in Ohio. They met in New York. My father was given $200 and a bus ticket by a priest in Dayton. And he went to New York to follow his dreams of being a Broadway actor. And my mother got a scholarship from the Kiwanis Club in Cleveland, where her final address here in Ohio. And she was, it was a scholarship to the New School. So she was a fine artist and a painter. And so she took this scholarship and went to New York, and there my parents were, you know, in this big city, and these two Buckeyes in this big city. And they met through a mutual friend. And then 3 weeks later, they were living together, and 63 years later, they're still together, married 61 years now. And so that's the initial Ohio connection, but it also connects to The Way. When we were doing our road trip for The Way in 2011, so I had designed a cross country road trip where we would take we'd load my dad and my son and I in the bus, a tour bus. I put the poster, shrink wrap the poster around the bus, and we did 35 cities in over 50 days. We slept on the bus. We ate on the bus. We did interviews from the bus. It was it was almost like our own pilgrimage across America to sell this movie and to take the film to an audience that we thought was our core group. We did two screenings a night. We did one secular, one non-secular. We did a Q&A after each one. We never vetted any of the questions. And it was an absolutely amazing experience. One of the our final stop on the Way bus tour was here in Cincinnati. And it was at the request of Christian Schlottman, who said, hey, you know, we'd love for you to come through, check out Cincinnati, screen the movie here, and then we'd love to show you what Cincinnati has to offer. So we said, all right, great, let's do that. So my dad and the rest of the team split after the last screening, and my son and I stayed. We were here for about 3 days, and we, you know, got a tour of the city. I started to fall in love with the OTR area. And then in 2017, after I shot the movie The Public here, I decided it was time to make a purchase here. And so I bought a building in OTR, and I've been rehabbing it ever since. But so I'm a Cincinnati a resident. This is my adopted city. And it, you know, in many ways, I kind of owe a debt of gratitude to the movie, to The Way. I probably would not have landed here in the same and gotten an opportunity to see the city in the same way.
I cannot think of a better emissary for Cincinnati than Kristen. She's a former podcast guest just a couple weeks ago, actually. And I would fall in love with the city too if she was my tour guide.
Right on. No, it's an extraordinary city. And it's just in the last decade, it's just, as you guys know, you've seen it just, you know, get onto a national stage, obviously, with the Super Bowl, and, you know, all eyes are on Cincinnati. And we like that. Obviously, we don't want it to become a Nashville or Atlanta, however, because we want to be able to walk and be able to drive through the city. But on the other hand, it's like we want to bring industry here. We want to bring movies here. We want to put eyeballs on the city because, you know, as I said in Vanity Fair, this is the Paris of the Midwest. I believe that. It's just an extraordinarily beautiful city. And I think when I'm talking to people in LA and New York, they're like, oh, Cincinnati. It's like, no, dude, you got to check it out. You got to get your butt here and check it out.
No, I agree with that. And my friends from all over the country now want to come visit me all the time. When I moved here 20 years ago, that was not the case. They were like, what you doing? Right. They're like, what? They didn't understand. I had my bachelorette party at one, the only bar in OTR that was open. And for them to come now and see where I live here and everything, I love showing off the city.
Yeah, no, it's once people get here, they're dazzled. And we want to just keep that pressure up, right?
So we want to dig in more into that, but let's talk about The Way. And it is kind of a unique situation to 10 years, 11 years after the fact, do a re-release. But it's also kind of a special movie because when it initially came out, it sort of kind of had a long, slow, like, following that built. People gradually became aware of it, like, built over time. Can you, is that unique to your situation, to your experiences in Hollywood? And why with this movie do you think it had that sort of very long tail?
Well, it's not sort of an obvious suspect in terms of cult film following, right? I think you could probably say that Repo Man, which is another movie I did back in the day, Repo Man has that cult film sort of following that it continues to enjoy to this day. The Way I never expected would have that same kind of vibe. However, people would watch this movie, get up off their couch, book their ticket to Spain, and then go walk 500 miles. I mean, and that's, you know, I'm talking about tens of thousands of Americans, and then hundreds of thousands worldwide saw this movie and were inspired to go walk the Camino. So it's not just a movie, it's become sort of a movement. And you know, in fact, the New York Times did a piece about how the film had helped the Spanish economic development, especially in the north of Spain, that they attributed an uptick in hotels and albergues and restaurants and all along the way. because there were so many new faces and new pilgrims out on the Camino. So this movie, I may never do another movie like this that inspires people in this same way, that the feedback that we get, whether it's snail mail, because my dad's not a computer, he's only snail mail only. So he'll get letters every week. I get emails, I get mail, but people saying, thank you for making this movie. It changed my life. And sometimes that's all they say, that this movie changed my life. So that kind of feedback is, it's pretty extraordinary. And I, like I said, I'm not sure when I'll have the opportunity to make another film that actually inspires people to actually go to another country and walk 500 miles. Right.
So it's a family movie, and tell us a little bit about that, but with the side of travel movie too.
Sure. Sure. So it is about a father and son. It is about their relationship. I play the son, and this is not a spoiler alert. My character passes in the first few minutes. My dad's character, Tom, is this sort of country club guy. His idea of a foursome is, you know, four doctors out on the golf course. He's got a very cush life, very cozy in Ventura, California. He gets this call from France, from the mountains of the Pyrenees in France, and they say your son has died on the Camino de Santiago. And he says, I don't even know where that is. So he travels to Spain with the intention of collecting the body, bringing him back for burial in the United States. And instead, he's inspired to do the Camino himself. He has his son's remains cremated. He takes his ashes along the Camino. And basically, it's a father-son road trip. But the son is, he's in the box. So, and along the road, he meets three other pilgrims. Guys and a gal that he doesn't necessarily want to be with, he doesn't want to travel with. He kind of picks them up along the way, or they pick him up. And they are four unlikely companions who become family by the end of the movie. And my dad's character becomes the father to these three other companions in a way that he could never be to his own son. And he becomes fully realized by the end of the movie, and he becomes a citizen of the world. He becomes, in many ways, he becomes the son by the end of the film.
I mean, travel has a way of doing that. Indeed. There are trips that some trips are just magic and they change you forever, and you don't know going into what that trip is going to look like.
Indeed. And that's why we were inspired to reach out to Rick Steves, the travel icon, who has joined us now in this partnership and this re-release. A few weeks ago, we did our own pilgrimage up to Edmonds, Washington, and which is Rick Steves' hometown. We went to an old pub, which was once his father's piano sales showroom. And we filmed a conversation between Rick Steves and Martin and I, talking about travel, talking about family, talking about Spanish culture and faith. And it's a 20-minute ad at the end of the film. So those who go to see the movie now on May 16th will be treated to this terrific conversation between the three of us, where I'm really acting more as moderator, and I'm sitting between these two legends, the travel legend and the acting legend, and asking questions about their lives and about immersive travel and the road as church and culture. And it's a terrific conversation, and I think a wonderful addendum to the movie. And it sort of gives it another look too. It allows people to sort of say, well, I may have already seen that movie, but nobody has seen the Rick Steves portion of this.
So the movie's being released in theaters day only.
That's right.
And then that's the only place you can see that conversation.
Well, there will be a 1 month period where Fathom Events is going to offer it to other venues. So from May 16th to June 16th, there will be news in which you can, and information on the Fathom website about where else you can see it. But initially, if you want to see this movie on the big screen, which is how it was intended to be seen, and you want to see it in community with other people, which is, I think, sort of the best way to see this film, then it is May 16th. And that's Tuesday. So it's a good night to go to the movies and a good night to essentially by proxy go to Spain.
So I am looking forward to it.
We got the logistics out of the way, but just to underscore that, it is the theatrical one-day release on May 16th, although there will be other opportunities if you go to the Fathom website. But I think that's like a fun sort of like, you know, you've turned it into an event. And as you said, to watch it in community and experience it that way and then kind of get the behind the scene, you know, hear you talk about the movie. And I'm sure this is some of the things you're going to talk about, but we like to spoil things here. We like to break news.
Sure.
But
sure. And why would you?
is there something revelatory in that conversation that you want to tease or talk to our listeners about?
Well, you know, what we talk about in the piece is a lot of immersive travel. And you know, my father and I wrote a book. It was not a bestseller because we didn't throw anybody under the bus. It wasn't a tell-all, but it was a companion piece to The Way. It's called Along the Way, A Journey of a Father and Son. And again, like I said, nobody bought it because we refused to tell stories that, a lot of publishers wanted to hear. They wanted to hear more juicy details. And we thought, you know, we're not throwing anybody under this bus. We're going to keep it family oriented, and we're going to, you know, again, we're not going to dig into the dark history of our family, certainly. So so the book came out, and we talked a little bit about immersive travel and about our family, you know, over the years, how we would go to the Philippines or Mexico or Rome or La Junta, Colorado for Badlands and sort of dig in. But again, nobody really read, like I said, nobody read the book. But so Rick and Martin and I talk about the power of immersive travel and the power of digging in to a community and not just being tourists, but being part of a community. And I think that is, on one hand, it was very disruptive for me as a kid to sort of get picked up out of school and transported to another country or another state. And now you're in second grade or you're in fifth grade in Colorado, in Arizona, in Phoenix, Arizona, in you're doing, you know, remote tutoring in Rome. It's like, man, when you're a kid, you're sort of like, what's going on? We're sort of following dad no matter what, but, you know, to what end? So it was very disruptive. And so we talk about that, but we also talk about the beauty of this idea of when you go somewhere, when you have that immersive travel experience, you're learning some Spanish conversation, you're learning some conversational Italian, you know the members of the other members of your community, the people you're living next door to. And so I would say that we touch on that in that conversation and how personal those trips ultimately, in retrospect especially, how they affected my life and my dad's life.
When you talk about being disruptive, do you mean just because you're getting pulled out of school or because, you know, it's shaking things up? Is that?
Or imagine this, you know, I was 14 years old and I had been elected a boys vice president of my junior high for my senior year we were three year junior high, and I was supposed to be back in time to start my duties as boys vice president. And there I am in the Philippines. And I was promised that I could be home for the start of school year. And now it's October. And now it's the middle of October. And now it's the end of October. And I'm still not home. And to make a phone call, this is back in, you know, 1976, to make a phone call to the United States took 3 hours. You had to put the call in, and then the connection took, you know, sometimes up to 3 hours to make that connection. So I was very disconnected from my friends, from my school, from my studies, and so that was a disruption. That was, and yet I was in the world and I was traveling, and so it you have to sort of weigh the balance of those experiences versus what I was missing back home. And again, I think that where I think I've never been able to look at travel as leisure or pleasure. I've only looked at travel as work. So, and I think in my life, I've really only gone on two leisure or pleasure trips. One when I was 12, took a skiing trip, and another when I was 16. But even as an adult, I don't think of going somewhere to enjoy myself. I don't think of going somewhere to relax. I never picture myself on a beach in Hawaii or, you know, skiing the Alps, just because that beach would have to be a film set, or the Alps would have to be, you know, training for, you know, some ski movie. It was always that sort of, I was always thinking in terms of preparation or work, if I was going to travel to a remote and continue to travel to remote locations. So, yeah, man, it's, I wish that were not the case. I wish that I could figure out how to relax more and take more leisure time, but, you know, it's just not how I'm wired. Thanks, Mom.
I'm terrible at relaxing, so I relate to that. Although I do like a good beach in Hawaii.
The inspiration for the way, did you have an experience, a travel experience on the Camino de Santiago? What was the inspiration for that being the setting for the way? Of all the travel destinations that you were personally familiar with in your upbringing, what was the connection there?
So my father had gone to Spain in 2003 to check out the Camino and also take a trip to Ireland with his brothers. He wanted to create sort of a little bit of a reunion in Ireland and celebrate the 100th year anniversary of his mother's birth. And so they traveled to Ireland, and then he said, "Let's go to Spain and check out the Camino de Santiago." And there were no takers except my son, who was working as his assistant at the time on the West Wing. Now, this was during the middle of the popularity of the show. The hiatus period was about 6 weeks. So they had about 3 weeks left of the hiatus. And so my dad said, "Let's go to Spain, check out the Camino." They go. But they didn't have the time to walk it. So they rented a car and they began to drive. And they stopped in a little town called Burgos, which is on the Camino. And if you're looking at the map of Spain, it's about 2 hours north of Madrid. And they stopped there overnight to stay at a Casa Rural, and, you know, which is a pilgrim's hostel. They take, you know, pilgrims in. So they stopped there to spend the night. And the innkeeper's daughter walked in. Her name is Julia. She took one look at my son. He took one look at her. They fell in love almost immediately. He ended up going to live in Spain and stay there for about 9 years. They got married in 2009, which is the year we began shooting the way. But so I was inspired. I would go.
So what
there.
You're saying is he takes after your dad when it comes to sparking a romance and exactly. not dragging it out.
Exactly. No, he was all in right after they met. He comes back to the United States and says, "Hey, Dad, yeah, I'm going to go to university in Burgos." I was like, "Okay, what's your name?" Come on, man. Yeah, you're not fooling anybody.
So, I have to ask you a question, because the beginning of this podcast is often very politics focused. And so a lot of political people in Cincinnati are our loyal listeners. Thanks, guys. The West Wing is a thing here. I know that you know this. So you were in one episode. You played the young version of your father, right?
On a TV up in the corner of some room, some bar or something. You see me? Yeah, that
so
was it.
So if you give us like one West Wing tidbit, but people will be very disappointed about that.
Yeah, the tidbit is they never paid me for that appearance. Not even a residual.
There's our headline. Emilio Estevez stiffed by the West Wing.
I was.
The residuals from that movie must be crazy just from here. I mean, I know people who like watch it every day. West For real. Wing. Yeah.
No, it's a wonderful show. He's terrific in it. And he's sort of the president we all wish we had, right?
Yes. There's no other answer there. That's a true story.
Catholic and moral.
Uh-huh. So, yes. So it's nine. So as we're kind of, we have a little, only a couple more minutes. We do want to talk about fun things in Cincinnati, right, Burl?
Yes. If Emilio Estevez was our tour guide.
For Cincinnati.
If you were going to share your tips for a fun day, afternoon, evening in Cincinnati, like, and where might people run into you? And I have to ask that we could run down the list of everything that you've been in, and it would take the whole podcast. You know, like me, I'm going to confess, never watched the Mighty Ducks, but man, was I all in on Young Guns. Like, I wanted to be a young gun when that movie came out. You know what I mean? So everybody probably has their own connection to you through the work you did. Where do people recognize you from the most?
Well, I would say it is probably Young Guns, Mighty Ducks. And I would say that, you know, when I think that I could call them, like when someone is approaching me and they're saying, hey, man, I really loved you in. And I'll say, I know, Repo Man. They're like, no, The Way. I was like, really? So that is, you know, again, I'm always surprised by the person who says, I love The Way. It's never who I think it is. Never who I think it's going to be, but I would say Young Guns, Mighty Ducks, are probably the top two I get on the street. Sometimes Maximum Overdrive, but I've tried to get that off of my resume along with a few others, like Free Jack. I'd like to see, I've called IMDb. I've written them numerous times to say, hey, I wasn't in that movie, but fortunately I was. So, you know, listen, you're going to have some stinkers on your resume. It comes with the territory. You do this long enough and you're bound to make some mistakes. But hey, you know, but in terms of having fun around Cincy, I mean, gosh, where do you start? And talk about what I could take the whole podcast talking about is where to go in Cincy. And I mean, it's, you know, which James Beard award winning restaurant should I pick tonight? I mean, it's madness. Which brewery is, you know, doing the best. I mean, it kind of blows your mind. You walk out your door and you're like, okay, I can walk to a baseball game. I can walk to a football game. I can go watch a soccer game. It's like moments from where you step out your front door. And that is, it reminds me of New York early 60s when I lived there. It was like, feels like a neighborhood. It feels like, you know, people. It feels like you walk into a place and it's like, you know, you know people by their first names. You don't find that, certainly not in New York anymore. You don't find that in Los Angeles. Certainly, there's no real community there. I call L.A. It's 40 suburbs connected by 7-Elevens. There's no real community there. And here it's you know, again,
I'll neighborhoods connected by chili parlors.
I know.
That's hysterical. You're not wrong.
here's where I need to throw in like a thank you to our mutual friend, Jackie Rowe, who when I went to LA for the Super Bowl, helped me get around. So we'll just throw out a big fat thank you to our mutual friend there.
Indeed.
Well, in the remaining moment that we have, is there anything about The Way in this effort that we didn't ask you that you want to convey to our listeners? And I'll just remind everybody again, May 16th, one day theatrical release enhanced by the conversation you talk about, the making and the impact that the film had. Anything else we need to know?
I would say get your advance tickets soon, because I think Newport on Levee's already sold out. We're going to try to get them to add an extra showing. The demand for this movie, because we've taken it down off of all of the streaming sites.
We know. We tried to, I personally tried. Okay. Another confession time. Haven't seen it. Feel totally inadequate now. Tried to stream it in preparation for this interview and got stiff armed. So yeah, you cannot watch it on any of the streaming services.
I am totally responsible for that. So, but that I think drives more eyeballs and butts for into sure. seats in the theater. So we're encouraging people to buy their tickets in advance. And then, we also know that 50% of our audience is going to be walk up, but we don't want the people who are going to walk up to get turned away. That's, that's not a good message. So you know, get out there and get those tickets as soon as you can.
All right. Well,
thank you so much for joining us. I really appreciate it. This is a special treat to me. I tried not to fangirl too much. I think I was pretty good.
You did very well. No, you did.
All right. So, thank you.
Thanks, Bo. Appreciate it. Thanks, Sherry. Appreciate it. Bye-bye.